Lunch with Leon.
Hello and welcome to Lunch with Leon. Amazing, it is episode 123. I looked this up. Globally, the average podcaster publishes about 21 episodes before abandoning it. So I'm really pleased that we're still going strong, despite the increasing numbers of podcasts in the marketplace. And here we are with 123 episodes for everybody to listen to. So since we last met, I was delighted to chair the Rural Bus Conference organised by Landor for the Bus Centre of Excellence and the UK government. We were in Chester on the site of the oldest racecourse in the world. There was no racing that day other than through a packed agenda, and we were delighted to have Ruth Cadbury, the chair of the Transport Select Committee, to wind it up. Nobody in the transport business can call themselves a professional unless they've sat before the Transport Select Committee. And in my case, it was Gwyneth Dunwoody, who was somebody you didn't tangle with. So this episode is another bus one, as I have Andrew Sherrington from Go Ahead with me. Andrew is head of strategic development for Go South Coast and the general manager for Swindon and Salisbury Reds. He also spent some time at First Bus, but that wasn't until some years after I left.
I'll be really honest with you, Leon. I didn't join First because I wanted to join First, apart from for one reason, and that is I wanted to take it to a different place. And when James Freeman phoned me up and said, "Oh, I might have a role you might be interested in an area you might be interested in, and you also a big Badgerline fan, aren't you, Andrew?" It made it really difficult for me to say, "Oh no, I'd like to have a stab at that," basically. And that took me to First. And I had, I think 4 great years in First West of England and 2 great years at First Cymru.
Yeah.
Right up until the pandemic. And it was, you know, it was a very challenging time. It wasn't an easy place to work at times, but it was also very rewarding when it ever worked.
So both of those were in my control when I was divisional director, because we did a bit of a swap because I had FTR to look after. And yeah. FTR, the launch was going to be in York. Dave Kay and I swapped the West Country for York. So he ended up with the West Country and I ended up with York, because it was hard to manage FTR and not be responsible for York. But the time in the West of England that I remember, and indeed in Cymru under Justin Davis, was sort of managed decline. And when James got to the West Country, he sort of supercharged it a bit, didn't he? And he really got cracking.
It did. I mean, we had Western Supermare, which was loss-making. Bristol, politically, was a very difficult place. And James went in off the back of the big fare changes that they did. And I came in after that and looked after no one could really say my title. My title was Everywhere Not Bristol, I think, was what we decided was the most appropriate. Yeah. And from that point, We then did. Sorry, I was distracted by Mr. Lee Kwong coming in the room. Sorry.
Yeah, I saw him go past. Tell him if he wants his own episode, he'll have to ask.
Just to start again. So I came in after James did the big fare changes, and then I had Bristol Not Everywhere Not Bristol, which in fact, in my opinion, was the best bit. All the people were great, and that was the big thing about that. The people were fantastic, and they had a really want for doing something different, and particularly in Western Supermare, which was missing some critical mass. And we did a big swap with a load of routes and gave it, I think PBR went up from 40 to about 60, and the place just boomed. We brought back Badgerline as well, along with my colleague Chris Hansen, who was the OM there at the time, and it really started to go great guns.
Sure. And look, that big difference in First, because of course I left First literally at the same moment that Moy Lockhead retired. We were together literally on the last day. And of course, in due course, you had the benefit of a Giles Fernley period.
Yes.
And of course, we were stuck with the common branding, no exceptions, across the network. And you could do all sorts of local initiatives, which I thought was just so obvious. And Moy and I had many professional disagreements about this. He wanted people in Aberdeen, when they went on their holidays to Plymouth, to know the buses were run by the same people. And my argument were, nobody from Aberdeen goes on holiday in Plymouth anyway, so what's the point? Buses are essentially local, which is what Go Ahead has done successfully for such a very long time. And what I think under Giles Fernley First, you were able to develop more of, I think.
We were. I mean, I think you knew the tides had changed. I never quite knew where people stood on this. And people, I think, liked it, but didn't like to say it publicly to a point. I always remember the finance director coming up to me for the UK bus saying, "Do we have blue buses in Bath now?" And I just went, "Yes." And I didn't quite know where that conversation was going to do. And he went, "Oh, they look nice." And that was it. That was it. It was, that was the endorsement I needed. That was Bath Blues we did there,
Sure.
which was after, which was James was very keen to do blue because reminisced to the tramways era. And but that was the city, Bath City brand. And yeah, I thought that that was a really good endorsement that he had noticed, and B, he didn't say no
No,
or
sure.
why.
But look, you and I both agree buses are essentially local, right? So
Absolutely, yeah.
the
Absolutely.
only people in Aberdeen to satisfy are the people in Aberdeen, and the only people to satisfy in Plymouth are the people in Plymouth. And anything else, frankly, is just the identity police having fun. And I think we had all the downside of being a sort of national conglomerate with no heart, and none of the benefits of cute, cuddly, and local. Things
I think
change,
it's
which is good.
important. It's important, Leon, whilst I absolutely agree with that, I think it's also important. I think Go Ahead of being particularly successful, this is important how it all knits together as well. It's still, even though you have your localization, your different colors, and we did do it in West of England with the common application, it might just be in different colors. You need an underlying theme to run through it so that people can see that actually it is more your opportunity to travel is wider than your immediate outside your door.
Yeah. The other one I thought we never exploited properly was for those places, of which Bristol and the West Country is one, where both the bus and the rail were in common ownership. We never did enough to exploit that. And the rail people never wanted to talk to us very much in first. And one of the things I desperately tried to do, one of my list of failures in my career, I thought that we ought to get rail to accept that decent distance rail tickets, the plus bus, was baked in, and you had to opt out as opposed to opt in. So the only way to opt out of Plus Bus was to go and queue at the ticket office and explicitly say so. All the machines would say with it. And wouldn't it have been wonderful? You bought a ticket from London, Paddington to Bristol, and when you got there, you had the Plus Bus add-on. That was for the local travel in Bristol. And I couldn't see when they wouldn't do it nationally, I tried then to do it locally, because it just seemed to me that we'd get a lot more revenue, all those £2 as it was in those days, which would go into a pot which we'd distribute to the operators roughly like we did concessionary fares. And all that extra money would provide more capacity and more service and more revenue. And people in my mind like a bargain. And if it appears to be free, they'll use it. So instead of getting the taxi, I'll get on the bus. And to my great sadness, we never achieved it.
I'll be honest with you, that is such a no-brainer. And now, we've got opportunities even now across my operating patch today to be able to still do that, should the will be there. But it needs that to start with. And the technology, I think whenever someone brings this up, it always comes back to the same bit of conversation, which is rail ticketing and acceptance and understanding and being able to get through those barriers and everybody understanding what it is. I think that's always the bit that holds everybody off. But you've got to have a will to start with. I think
Yeah,
that's
I
the
think
first
so.
place.
I think so. And we hear lots about integration and all that stuff and interchange. And Thomas Abelman is now deploying his mini Switzerland idea here in the UK as an
Yes.
experiment, which is fantastic. And he describes it that in Switzerland, the whole country breathes in every hour and breathes out as the
That
buses and
that's
trains
it's
all meet.
interesting. The mini, I like the idea of that mini Switzerland concept, and I can tell you how much I liked it. I did it in Snowdonia.
Oh, really?
Yes. So if you the Snowdon Sherpa, along with some colleagues at TFW, we got ourselves into sort of a unique opportunity where we found that anything with the word metro in it, as in metro trains, have money. And they were so keen to deliver. I spent 2, 3 years at Transport for Wales, and I was there during a unique opportunity where I claimed not to know how the procurement rules worked and all these things. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. But we managed to push things out the door really quickly, and people liked it. One of which was Snowdon Sherpa, where we managed to secure some money for Gwynedd. And Gwynedd had a will to do something different in Snowdonia, which was coupled with car parking and visitor attraction. It was post-COVID as well, so staycationism was quite high. And they wanted to do do something. I looked at the network and I thought, this is such a fragmented thing between two counties, about five tenders, different operator morning and evening, different fares between overrunning sections versions of what we traditionally know as Snowdenship and the local bus network. So I threw it all up in the air, used our total resource, and asked for two more buses, from funding for two more buses, and then said, we'll get the money back in 2 years for the extra buses, so it won't cost you any more than what it used to, like for like. And did a tap file plan based around where all the buses do all converge at the bottom at the terminus there. And it worked. And I couldn't believe that it worked on paper. And we managed to do it. So all these buses come in, get to the terminus at the bottom of the mountain, and all leave to all four corners of Snowdonia or Eraring National Park.
So you get the credit then for what Thomas is now claiming as...
At
least yours was on a mountain.
that's right. I was doing a little bit of stuff I'd learned at Go Ahead in Wales, where you cash in on slight tourist economy to make it pay there for the locals and take the heat out for the locals and brand it in a way that's attractive and fitting to the environment, which if you look it up, it's all in. So I got Snowdonia all over it. And the passenger numbers, I think, are growing to about 60% more passengers than when they started. It's just amazing. It's probably the single standout growth thing I've ever achieved in my career. And I did it whilst I was at TFW, which I wasn't expecting.
No, indeed. And we love TFW. Indeed, Marie Daly, a guest on this very podcast, episode 116.
Yes, listen to it.
If anybody hasn't listened to it. And Marie and I met in Kuala Lumpur.
Random.
So you have to go all the way to Malaysia in order to meet the chief executive of Transport for Wales. But she and I were speaking on the same platform, so we found ourselves talking in the hotel in the evening, as you do. Anyway, Transport for Wales is storming on. Some political change there, of course. Who knows where all that lot's going to go now? Some political change.
No, that's right. I think Plaid is probably the least change. I think they'll probably be able to take forward the plan with Plaid. It probably might even be better with under Plaid. I mean, so from that point of view, I'm kind of pleased that it's ended up the way it has. I mean, it's gone great guns. As a user, I live there, seeing the things that I was involved with and how the team have taken that forward there, particularly the Trans-Cymru network, which again is a national style tap file plan, all connects all the way across Wales, and it's going great guns. But we'll have to wait and see what franchising brings. I hope they're able to grow the network in the places they want.
Sure. So as you know, as I've morphed into the industry's Victor Meldrew, I'm now using every platform I can, including when I did the CPT dinner speech back end of last year and a couple of episodes ago on this podcast. So here's my great worry. The great worry is the economic climate of this country is headed south at a terrible rate. Artificial intelligence is coming in at a great speed, and that will have huge effects, including the number of people travelling to work, together with the inevitable government spending cuts in order to deal with the terrible level of borrowing that we've got and the costs of all of that. There are going to be, sooner or later, some serious cuts, and the government, this government in particular, will find it hard to do that to welfare or pensions or health, education, and so on. So next on your list is transport, and I'm going to say it again because I enjoy saying it. Before decarbonisation is finished and before franchising is finished, they will have run out of money. What do you reckon?
I think that one day people will realise that buses are a better deal than trains. I'm kind of hoping that is true. And the amount of money that system sucks up, even in Wales, it, compared to what can be delivered by buses, a much, much better value for money. I mean, I listen to David Leader. I love all the stuff he does. I read it. I think that he speaks absolute sense. And I listen to him on your podcast as well. And it's a real stark realisation. But I just hope that someday, somewhere, people realise what value and what can be delivered through buses over trains.
Yeah, it is interesting. And we say it, of course, the public, of course, still thinks that the renationalisation of rail is a popular policy. You know, the public actually likes it. And there's no doubt the government will stick with it because it is a popular policy. My goodness me, it doesn't have very many. And it is one. But as you say, it does soak up a phenomenal amount of money.
Infrastructure costs. I mean, they're just spiraling. Everything just spirals. I mean, I get on a train in the morning to go to Swindon, and they're nowhere near as busy as what they used to be. They've still got this, still probably got some lag in the network there that's not under capacity. The frequency seemed to be there on my line between South Wales and London, but on a lot of the trains, particularly in the middle of the day, just isn't there. And people aren't traveling clearly. Money being thrown at it continuously. HS2, oh, you know, you could get, the list can just go on. Whereas buses are so much cheaper and can offer so much more multiple times over, and also cater better for more people if they have more money. Yep. So then attract even more people. It's the rail is a bit of a very political, and so therefore, and people shout quite loudly about it still. And buses, even though I feel like it's slightly better than what it was, it still doesn't get the same airtime.
No, that's absolutely true. And in value for money terms, we are just so good at it. And in fact, yeah. The economics are fascinating, aren't they? Mathematically, I think David Begg might have done this. You only need a couple of extra fare-paying passengers on every journey, on every bus, every day, to completely transform the industry from where it is, which is sort of broadly on a knife edge, where the cities broadly subsidise the rural, to absolutely transform it. And then his second calculation, which it's quite a long time ago now, which was that if you could save the PVR, that it is only there because of congestion, again, rapidly transform it. In this franchising, the big weakness in franchising for me is that in many cases, the combined authority, the mayoralty, is not the highway authority. And therefore, getting bus priority measures is going to be a real slog. Now, my big worry is that even though they'll paint the buses a different colour and there'll be more of the community, the traffic speeds won't go anywhere. That's my big worry.
I've only got a meeting this afternoon about putting a bus lane in my operating patch, and a significant one to make a big difference. In Salisbury, it is horrifically congested. It's got a very, very old grid system. We've got pockets of growth on the places that we've invested, winners and losers, but the traffic speeds are just getting slower and slower and slower. And that PVR thing, you know, I've already had to put in at least one on the town network, which now all cycles where it never used to. We've had to cycle it and mash it up a bit differently to create more space and more time. That's going to come to a head. You can only do that so many times before we need to add in more cost, and that then the sustainability of the whole thing starts to wobble, and so on and so forth.
And I think London has demonstrated where the tipping point is, because London has got to the place where some of the road speeds are so slow that it's not attractive to sit on a bus with doors anymore, because you could walk it. If you're going to travel between Aldwych and Trafalgar Square, well, you might as well walk it, actually, because westbound on the Strand is going to be nose to tail for the greater part of the day. So the ridership is tanking, and there are measures, but those measures are not keeping pace with the deterioration. So you add the not having to travel anyway on top of the it's getting slower and slower and slower, you've got a recipe for a huge decline.
Yeah, I mean, I've got my own little version of that in my own little city here, and that's a place called Brown Street, the length of it. It's I think the average speed is as low as 3 miles an hour. I mean, you're just like, that literally is walking. We've got some very clever people in our scheduling department, and they've done all the analysis for me. And I was just like, I want, in these circumstances, you want it to be as bad as possible because it makes your case the really strong. I mean, you shouldn't want things to be that bad, should you? But it does make, I've got a really strong case that we'll be presenting this afternoon to say you need to invest in this. And we have got a change of colour in Salisbury. It used to be blue and now it's yellow. So I'm taking the opportunity to have a little bit of a different think here.
So there's the problem where the highway authority is not the bus authority, which is going to be a problem for the big conurbations and so on. There is the countervailing problem, isn't there, which is the dying high streets. There's big clamours for free car parking, easier loading and unloading, and all the things that work against us. I've worked out, you always know when a high street's dying, it's when the charity shop closes and leaves town. Because yes. You can't make it go on volunteer labour and free materials, and you really you aren't going to make anything go, are you?
I'm lucky here. I've got two. So on top of doing the head of business development piece, Leon, I do look after Salisbury and Swindon, and they are tale of two towns of two different towns by every way possible. And Salisbury, luckily, has got a visitor economy. If you've got a mix of economy in your town or city, you are, I bet you those bus towns are okay. Where you've got more industry, a dying high street, Swindon, I think Swindon's bottom out. We're on the up in Swindon, I'd like to say. With the new bus Fleming Way, that really has impact in taking the town to a new level. And hopefully the town centre will come with it. But you couldn't get more contrasting if you tried.
No, sure. But you're lucky, of course, because you have the Secretary of State for Transport as your constituency
Yes.
MP in Swindon South, do you not?
Yes, we do. And I think my managing director, Ed Wills, he met her only last week to discuss all things bus matters. But we're very pleased in Swindon. We've changed the outlook of the business and we're on the up there. So I'm very pleased to say, but it hasn't been without its challenges. And mainly the number one thing has been the quality of the high street.
Sure. You do remind me, by the way, you remind me of a miserable budget presentation in First Group by the team that was responsible for Slough and Windsor.
Oh,
And
right.
they talked about managing. I said, listen, you guys, just listen. You've got a huge airport, a castle, one of the country's biggest hospitals, a trading estate on one side of the town and housing on the other side of the town. Many subsidiaries would be delighted to have one of those as a market. You've got all of them. You must be able to deliver growth, given that you've got a tourist market, you've got a workers at the airport market, you've got a workers on the trading estate market, you've got people going to and from the biggest hospital in the region. Come on, you've got to do better than this. And as I say, as you know, many towns would love one
Yeah.
castle or one airport or one hospital that would be a major attraction.
I think in latter years there, they did start to change the offer or the outlook of the offer in First in Slough,
Oh
which I
yes, and
think then.
in fact, I had somebody on the team, a wonderful guy, Matthew Wool, who absolutely transformed it in a way that Roger French would have been proud of, you know, in every respect, with the marketing and the bus stops and the route network and the sort of nice friendly feel to it, which was tremendous. What sort of exciting things coming to Go South Coast? What can people look
Well,
forward to?
I think at the moment we're just all about the electric buses at the moment. We have been very successful. I did the bid and then we just delivered, along with colleagues, our 30 for Salisbury. We're just waiting on the last nine just coming from Wrightbus to arrive next month or two. And we've got 31 on the Isle of Wight, which is now within a hair's breadth of being fully electric for the whole core network on the island, because we were successful in what I'm calling Zebra 3, which is really the original Zebra 2, has had some scope increases. We are now on the second scope increase on that.
Amazing.
And Isle of Wight have cashed in on that. So on top of the 31, they're getting another 22, which are due towards the end of next year. So that's really exciting. And I think then we'll be looking to make the, Ed set the bar, the saying, right, we're going to make the whole of the Isle of Wight electric, which will be quite something.
Indeed. And in fact, when you're able to do that, you do get some of the benefits, because when you've got mixed fleet of electric and
Yes.
diesel in the same garage, you've still got the diesel engine stores, you've still got the diesel engine's skills.
Absolutely.
And I was talking to Ray O'Toole the other day at the Stagecoach, and he was just saying, if you can do a complete depot or a complete town transformation, that's where you really get the savings out, because you no longer need so many engineers and you don't need all those dirty hand type skills.
That's right. I mean, in Salisbury, we will have a mixed fleet, but that's mainly driven by some challenging mileages. Although we have been successful in securing electric for our Activate route, that's very challenging mileage, that is. But we find the BYD product has been able to clear that, which is quite amazing. But the school fleet will be diesel. But in the future, that won't be the case, because, of course, my infrastructure that's here now, that's redundant right this second, could be charging in the middle of the day. And for buses that don't need the mileage, because that you might require from day one. And so we're just one step closer to being fully electric, but we're not at the place where enough vehicles are coming end of life electric. But when we get there, I think we're ready to do it.
Interesting. Sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night worried that in fact electric is just the stepping stone to something else, and we're going to have to go through this whole process again to do
Yes.
something else, of which hydrogen has been the stalking horse. But you know, I brought the first hydrogen buses into London, but that was
Yes. Yes.
2004. So here we are 22 years later. We're not much further forward because the ones in Aberdeen aren't working. The ones that you have down at Crawley are not working. And hydrogen is not yet ready, it seems, for this. But I do just worry we're going through this pain. And it is pain, isn't it? The electrical charging infrastructure and getting the power to the depots and the skills and all the things that you need. But is this it? Is this settled, or is there something else that we don't yet know?
That's a really good question. I'm kind of hopeful that batteries and the quality of the batteries and the possibility of the batteries will just carry on getting better and better and better. And that's already been proven in the lifetime of electricity being around now. I mean, we're just about to do a little experiment, and it is an experiment which might not work, because it is okay to try things that might not work, of repurposing some first-gen London stuff in the provincial life, because we can do another X amount of years out them very cheaply compared to buying new. And that's, you know, repurposing, recycling, it's got all, you know, and it's electric, it's all got all of those box ticks. But it depends how those batteries behave and how depleted they are. There's lots of companies that are able to replenish these things now. It's to what extent, and to we don't know. And we're just about to try and see if any of that is possible or not, and whether there's a case to do some more of it, because it could speed up electrification to some places that fit that purpose.
Yeah, and I think the midlife conversions are essential, because I don't think there's enough capacity, even with our friends from China, I don't think there's enough capacity to renew the bus fleet fast enough to meet all the obligations that all the mayors have said, that all the local authorities have said, that the companies have set themselves as targets. So unless there's some repowering and conversions to electric, I don't think there's enough capacity in the industry to deliver it. And I know there'll be an argument that says you could have 50,000 Chinese vehicles tomorrow if you wanted to, but we're not in a position to absorb them, actually. So therefore, the repowering of existing fleets got to be right.
I tell you what it is, Leon, right? One thing I've learned from this decarbonisation electric game is that it is a lottery. Yeah. It's a lottery of where you bought a bus depot X amount of years ago. And if Go South Coast, we've been able to do what we do because we have been nothing more, as far as I'm concerned, than lucky. That our electric is outside the door. It was as cheap as it could possibly be. The same on the Isle of Wight. It was just down the road, a bit further, but it cost a bit more, but not to the point where you hear some of the stuff in London where they've had to dig up miles, £800 a metre. You want to cry.
Yeah.
So it's that will really depict. And I think actually where we used to be able to go and buy bus depots and go and, you know, look at where we want to house vehicles was free and easy. It's not as free and easy, because I think power might be the first question you ask. And one thing I was looking at TFW, which I think we are also starting to look at in the fringes in Go South Coast, is smaller outstationing where you don't need as much of a supply and a bigger hit, as opposed to a big depot arrangement, cuts the requirement down you need in the town, but you might just have enough to do four buses out to X out station. So it's just about electric, and we got 12 hours on the schedule to do it, and that kind of works. And that was something I was exploring in Wales because of the geography and the rurality, and actually it might be possible if you do these little pockets here and there and everywhere, it takes the heat off the massive amount you might need in the centre.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, you say about luck. In London, we have also been lucky because we still have some bus garages that were tram and trolley bus sheds in their time. And yes. In many cases, they got their power from the underground, and all that's still available. So some of that's taking place in London too. On the other hand, if you're going to lay a cable all the way down the Chiswick High Road, it's several million pounds if you're going to have to dig up the road. And very interesting what you say about luck. If you just happen to have the depots coincidentally close to power, either because somebody else wanted it or because it was perhaps something else in the past, then that is lucky. And there will therefore be the opposite end of that. There'll be some places that will be fiendishly difficult to the point of uneconomic to get power to.
Absolutely, it will do, yeah, it will be.
And we'll get to those in due course.
And also the competition for power, Leon.
Yeah.
So I know one of our estate in Go Ahead, the power was secured, and then someone wanted to build something and realised we had it all.
Yep.
And so I was very unhappy about that. And then there was it just so happened that I think there was a bit, the company had secured more than they actually needed and was able to release. But nonetheless, you're in a queue as well to get it. So whatever power is available, you might be fifth or sixth compared to someone else who might want it. So you might still lose out. It's a very peculiar way of dealing with it, and how it works. But it is a lottery, and I'll maintain that until some sort of more maybe priority system is brought in as to or something. I'm not quite sure, but at the moment, I've lucked out.
Well, I'm glad you've done better in the lottery than I have, in both senses of the word. So finally, Andrew, and since you've got David Lee Kong in the office as well, it would be just remiss of me not to say we haven't seen you at the London Bus Museum at Brooklands for so long. We're open 363 days a year. We would like you to come and see us and see what we've got, from our very earliest horse bus to one of the original prototype BYD electrics from London. So do come down and see us.
Oh, yes, we do want to come to the London Bus Museum. We absolutely do. I haven't been since forever. I can't
Okay.
remember the last time I went.
I've been talking to the head of strategic development at Go South Coast Limited, Andrew Sherrington. Andrew, as we've discussed, absolutely full on here with your decarbonisation and electrification, the consequences of franchising, difficult market conditions, and as we say, in order to survive, you have to innovate. And that's pretty well what you're doing, of course, for Go South Coast, Andrew. So thank you very much indeed for joining us. This has been Lunch with Leon, which is produced in association with Passenger Transport Magazine. Do go across to passengertransport.org for all your latest news and information about what's happening in the passenger transport world. And Andrew, I look forward to seeing you again very soon.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Leon. Thank you.
Lunch with Leon features Leon Daniels and Andrew Sherrington. It is published in association with Passenger Transport Magazine. Please leave us a review and a rating wherever you get your podcasts from.